As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule WSL edition. Coming up on this show, Manchester United topped the WSL for the first time ever as they beat pacesetters Arsenal. We'll be hearing from goalscorer Ella Toon later.
I understand how to win leagues, says Chelsea boss Emma Hayes as the Blues leapfrog Everton. Plus, say her name. Oh yes, Alex Morgan makes her debut for Spurs. Finally, so that ends my vow of silence.
Welcome along, I'm Lindsay Hooper.
And I'm Kate Borsay. And this week we're joined by writer, broadcaster and Arsenal blogger Tim Stillman. Welcome back, Tim.
Thanks very much for having me back.
Ah, it's a pleasure. How is life with a baby?
Yeah, absolutely fine. She's 3 months old now and she's learning how to make sounds, which sounds cute, but is less cute at 5 o'clock in the morning. So again, I am already several hours into my day.
You still managed to be across the football though, Tim, and you were actually at the Arsenal match against Manchester United on Sunday, weren't you?
I was indeed, yes. Actually my first night away from my daughter because I went up and stayed on Saturday evening. But yes, I travelled up for the game and I'm sure we'll get into the nuts and bolts of that. But interesting game, shall we say.
Well, it's another of the FA's women's football weekends that this weekend coming. There's no Premier League men's football, of course, due to international fixtures. It's a big chance, isn't it, for the game to showcase itself, Tim? But it feels so gutting because these weekends always involve fans. It's always, isn't it, a race to see who can fill their stadium the most.
Or even break records, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this time last year you had Spurs Arsenal at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which absolutely smashed the WSL attendance record, and that is a real shame. And I think these women's football weekends are great initiatives, really, really nicely done ideas by the FA. But one thing I think they have done really well this time is staggering all of the kickoffs, so that, you know, so for example, on Saturday I'm just going to be glued to my sofa watching, you know, four games consecutively during the day. And it is a shame not to have the fans in, but I think they've done a really good job of making it a television spectacle.
Yes, you don't have to get out your PJs, basically. You could just be there all day watching women's football.
And BT Sport, guys, has just announced that it's going to make the Manchester Derby free to view. That's via BT Sport, their app, the website, and via YouTube as well. So if anyone wants to partake in a marathon like Tim, it's all there. It's all free to view. So good news.
Well, let's turn our attention now to the weekend's WSL action that just happened, starting with the new leaders of the WSL.
You're listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
James for Sixworth. Has she got the pace here? Jess Sixworth, look at her go. Sixworth still. And Ella Toon! It's in! She's done it! For Manchester United, and it could prove so important as well.
Manchester United 1, Arsenal 0. Ella Toon's late strike sent Manchester United top of the WSL for the first time ever. It's ended Arsenal's 100% start. Despite scoring 29 goals in the first five games of the season, the Gunners couldn't find the back of the net on this occasion. That's now five straight wins in the league for Casey Stoney's side, and it maintains their unbeaten start to the season. Tim, we already established that you were at this one. What were your thoughts watching the game?
It was a real statement win, I think, from Manchester United, because they didn't just nick this 1-0. I think they dominated the game for at least three quarters of it. They really took the game to Arsenal. If you compare this fixture last year, which Arsenal won in the last minute, understandably, I think Manchester United, they defended very deep. They tried to keep Arsenal out and nearly did it. It was very different this time, obviously, with the attacking talent they've got. They really took the game to Arsenal from the first whistle, really pressed them high. And to be honest, I think Arsenal, maybe the scoreline flattered Arsenal a little bit in the end.
It's interesting, isn't it? Kristen Press nearly scored her first goal for Manchester United, which would have topped off an already brilliant occasion. I agree with you, Tim. United looked strong from the off. There was just no getting past them at all. Although Mario Earps was made to work hard, so it wasn't completely one-sided, and I think we should mention that. I think the key thing for me is Joe Montemurro, the Arsenal manager, at the end of the game, just very simply saying, we weren't good today, we couldn't find any solutions with the ball. And I just wonder whether he's effectively saying that Man United wanted this game more. And if he was saying that, what does that mean that we can interpret from the Arsenal side right now?
Speaking to Joe afterwards, he's always a bad loser, which I think you'd expect from a manager at this level. But the problem for Arsenal is they've lost a lot of games this way. In 2020, they've lost twice to Man City, twice to Chelsea, to Paris Saint-Germain. When a good team presses them high up the pitch, they haven't been able to find an answer. And Joe sounded a little bit bereft to me afterwards. He kind of run out of ideas for how to deal with this approach, and they're going to face it again against Chelsea on Sunday. It's a worry for Arsenal at this point. I think Casey Stoney knew that, and she knew that there was a good chance of being successful with this tactic.
Well, she did, and she got her tactics spot on, Tim. And that's really the other underlying statement that he's saying there. You know, we couldn't find a way, but Casey could. And so actually the tactics between the two managers, she got hers spot on. And you'd be looking at that as maybe as a blueprint of other teams thinking, well, how do we go up against this Arsenal team that can just score so freely? This is how you do it. She showed exactly how you do it. I wonder as well whether there's a little bit here for Arsenal. When you're a team that have been scoring so many goals, you've been at the top of the WSL as the leaders, you've had people starting to talk about you again. I think we also addressed very early on in some early episodes about the fact that Joe had brought in some good signings at the back and addressed the spine of the team. I just wonder if it's just taken them by surprise, really, that a team set up like this, and when they get frustrated, I wonder now about the character about some of these players to be able to then move on when it's not going your way, because it has been going their way up until now.
Yeah. I'd use the word bereft again. They never really got into it. I guess if you were looking for an explanation or maybe even an excuse for Arsenal, again, the level of injuries, Kim Little and Jules Roord could only play for half an hour and they made a big difference. No Jordan Nobbs. You referenced some great defensive signings that were bought for exactly these types of games. Noel Maritz, Steph Catley, Jen Beattie, all injured. Lisa Evans injured, with a young centre-half in Lotta Wubben-Moy at right-back. Maybe there's a little bit of mitigation there, but this isn't the first time that Arsenal have not been able to deal with this kind of examination. And I'm just fascinated to see what they do tactically against Chelsea, because Chelsea are going to do exactly the same to them. And they've really got to come up with a solution, whether they change their style, their tactics or whatever.
Are any of those injured players due back, Tim? Because that is a considerable amount of very good players missing from that team.
Yeah, so Kim, Little, Jules Roord and Leonie Meyer all came on as subs. They should be okay to start on Sunday. But as for the Chelsea game, as I understand it, Steph Catley, Jordan Nobbs, Lisa Evans, Noel Maritz won't be coming back. Not sure about Jen Beattie. That's a bit of a mystery. It will be better, particularly in midfield, but still some key players missing there.
Arsenal are still second, Tim, so 2 points behind United. I'm wondering, are we now looking at United as potential winners of WSL this season? We've spoken about them being up there, potentially upsetting the apple cart of the normal top three. But do we go a step further?
Absolutely. They've played Arsenal and Chelsea at home now and taken 4 points from those games. So they're top after playing Arsenal and Chelsea. They've obviously got another big test against Man City this weekend, but absolutely 100%. I mean, I still think that probably Chelsea and over a season Arsenal are maybe a bit stronger, but certainly they are absolutely in the conversation for the top three. I looked at their bench on Sunday. They were able to bring on Katie Zellum, Lucy Staniforth, Lauren James. Alessia Russo was injured, not in the squad. They've got a really deep squad now, and I think they will absolutely be in the top three challenge right to the end. But you have to take them seriously as title challengers at this point, certainly.
There we go. The Stillman has spoken. Alessia Russo, by the way, is to have surgery on a hamstring injury. She suffered it on training on Friday, so that's why she missed the game. A couple of things that I wanted to mention. It obviously worked in Manchester United's favour. They had their League Cup game cancelled against Everton midweek. Arsenal played on Wednesday. So although they should have the depth to be able to deal with that, with injuries, of course, that's not going to help either. And then I think just whether there's a bit of vulnerability at the back, and we saw that illustrated by Lotta Wubben-Moi, Tim, who was she was shown a yellow card for that quite bad tackle, really, on Leo Galton. Casey Stoney saying after the game that she felt it should have been a red. She felt Arsenal should have gone down to 10 players.
Yeah, absolutely. I was right behind that. And had there been fans in the stadium, and, you know, United have a really partisan support who really kind of get on referees' backs and get behind their team, I think he might have been persuaded to show a red card. I think it should have been a red card. And the best indication of that for me was the press box, the kind of, ooh, as soon as it happened. And when that happens, you know it's kind of serious. And I wonder if the fact that it was a slightly younger player played into the referee's mind. It shouldn't have. It should have been a red card. But I think Arsenal did get away with one there.
I want to know what Casey Stoney is putting in the players' breakfast, because their work rate was just another notch. It went on another level. I thought I'd seen them working hard in previous matches, but maybe because they were up against Arsenal, they seemed to hit another level altogether.
The fact that their centre forward on the day was called Press was very apt.
They just didn't let up.
How many weeks have you had to put that one together, Tim? It's finally had an outing. Finally allowed. Well, actually, fitness of that Manchester United side, Casey's famous for working her players hard, and actually be interesting to see how much that fitness is a part of what they do, how much of their training that it takes up. And we can ask one of the players, actually, delighted to say that we got to speak to Ella Toon a little earlier.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ella, congratulations. We need to find out, first of all, the mood in the camp after that brilliant win against Arsenal.
Yeah, it's been a good mood in the camp today. We're all obviously very buzzing after the game. I think just because we deserve the 3 points and we put on such a great overall team performance. So today it's been very positive, and our focus has already turned on to City at the weekend, which is another huge game. So we're all looking forward to that one as well.
It's such a big game. We'll move on to that, but we just have to luxuriate a little bit longer in your goal. It was the winning goal of the game, coming 83 minutes, so coming late, but very much deserved. I think it looked like you were going to get something the whole way through that game. Did you guys feel like it was just going to be a matter of time?
Yeah, it felt like that there was a goal that was coming. It was just about keep working hard and keep sticking to the game plan, and eventually that goal would come, and luckily it did, and we took our chance, and it was just a bit of a relief because we knew we worked so hard and we stuck to the game plan that Casey gave us. And yeah, I'm happy that it fell to me and I took the chance, but I think whoever would have scored, it would have been unbelievable for the team. And obviously we were very happy to go up against such a big team and take away the 3 points from there.
It is a team effort, of course it is. But for you, it is a significant goal. It is a big deal. How did you feel afterwards? Great for the team, but you must have been really excited to be the player to secure the result.
Yeah, obviously, it's always great to get a goal. I think for me, it's just every time I step out on the pitch, I'm playing for the club that I've always ever wanted to play for. And I think it was such a big game going up against the top teams that we just really wanted to get the 3 points. And like I said, luckily the chance fell to me and I took the chance. And yeah, I was obviously over the moon after the game and all the nice messages that I received. I was really happy. And then I think now it's just about focus turns to Saturday. And I think we've got a win on Saturday because we've put in such a big performance against Arsenal, but it would be a shame now to drop points against City. So focus switches to that. But obviously I was very happy with the goal and I think it's up there, one of the best that I've scored in my career so far. So I was happy.
It's been such a strong season for you this season as well. I think ever since you started that first game, didn't you, the draw against Chelsea? And I think, you know, definitely your part in the team has really kind of come of age, if that's the right way to say it. You seem to have just slotted really well into the team this season. And if you compare it to where you were last season, it's just completely different where you are now.
Yeah, I think I've improved so much as a player since last season. I think lockdown really helped all the girls. We really worked hard when we were in lockdown, worked hard on the pitches, doing our gym sessions every day. And I think we've all come back so much stronger and our mindset's a lot different this year. We competed with the big teams last year, but it was a matter of taking our chances. And I think this year we've done that and we've took points at Chelsea, we've took points against Arsenal, and now it's keeping on working hard and doing that. And I think Casey's given me an opportunity and I've took it and she's trusted me to play against the big teams. And yeah, I've just got to keep working hard in training and hopefully she keeps putting her faith in me.
I thought it was really nice that Casey said afterwards that you'd given her no choice but to play you week in and week out. How have you done that?
I think just working hard in training. I think I stay out on the pitch after every session and try and do extra bits because I just want to keep improving. And my physicality side of the game, I think that let me down a lot. And the WSL is very competitive and there's a lot of strong players in the WSL and you've got to be able to use your body and stuff like that. And I think, like I said, in lockdown, it helped. I really worked hard in the gym and I think I come back a bit stronger and more physical. So I've just got to keep working on that and getting myself even more stronger to compete. And I believe a lot more now that I can compete with top sides and top players. And yeah, I'm very thankful that Casey's given me an opportunity and I've took it.
And it's that confidence as well, isn't it? I suppose having regular game time, having some brilliant support around you in terms of your fellow players and the quality on the pitch as well. It must be amazing having Tobin Heath and Kristen Press there. I mean, I'm a massive Tobin Heath fan. I always have been. I think she's wonderful. She's just amazing. What's it like having them in and around the team?
Well, yeah, I'm a massive Tobin Heath fan too. So it was a bit mad really when she came in, but they're just such nice people and they just want to help the team win and they're just so professional. And as young players, we've got quite a lot of young players in the squad, like they're such amazing people to look up to every day, and they've done things that we dream of doing, winning World Cups and stuff like that. So I think they've been amazing for us and they're obviously performing on the pitch as well, which is massive. And yeah, they've been really good.
I'm sure they have been. I know behind the scenes, Lindsay and I have discussed the physicality at Manchester United and your level of fitness too, which is vintage Casey Stoney, isn't it? I know Casey must work you hard. She works herself hard, right? She's one of those crazy people that goes out for runs at ridiculous times of the early morning. Yeah. And that's a key part of your game, isn't it? To be fitter than the opposition, to be stronger than the opposition. And we really saw that against Arsenal.
Yeah, Casey is probably one of the fittest on the team, actually. At United, it's always been about working harder than the other team, and that's down to our fitness and our physicality side of the game. And I think we want to go and press teams for 90 minutes, and we've got to be fit to do that. So, yeah, we work hard in training so that on a game day we can reach them high intensity levels and compete with the big teams throughout the 90 minute games. So, yeah, we've just got to keep that up and keep making sure that we recover well so that we're ready for the next one.
You started out at United, didn't you? But they didn't have a girls' side to go professional or not to kind of have a place within the leagues as well. So you left and now you're back. What's it like returning? Does it has it felt like coming home a little bit?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like when we were younger, it was always sad that there was nothing ever to look forward to, as in there was nothing ever to like progress to in the women's game for Manchester United. And then when United announced they were having a women's team, it was just unbelievable, really. Like, you dream of it when you're younger, playing for Manchester United, playing in a Manchester derby. I love Manchester United. Like, it's the team I've supported since I was little as well. So yeah, it's been great, and we're history makers and we'll continue to make history at this club. And it's just such a great club to be at, and yeah, I can't wait to hopefully win more trophies with them.
Yeah, exactly. There's some exciting times ahead. And just in the immediate, your team is top of the league.
Yeah, we are. But obviously, it doesn't matter at this moment in time. It's about at the end when we're hopefully top of the league then. But for now, it's just making sure that we're ready for each game as they come, and we take 3 points where we can, and we just keep working hard, and hopefully we'll be there at the end of the season.
The heating's on, it's getting darker earlier and earlier, so why not cheer yourself up this November with a subscription to The Athletic for just £1 a week. For only 100 of your English pence every 7 days, you'll get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, plus a breaking news service and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts. Sign up today at theathletic.com/offside.
Okay, well, let's move on to the chasing pack now. And Chelsea, just 3 points behind United, who topped the table after their 4-0 win over FA Cup finalist Everton. 2 goals in 2 minutes for Beth England put the game beyond the Toffees after Jisoo Young had opened the scoring. Pernille Harder got the fourth. What an amazing one it was, too. Deep into injury time that happened. Let's remind ourselves then of that icing on the cake.
Will there be a final chance for Bethany England, or perhaps Harder? Receives it back from England, and Harder, beautiful, absolutely beautiful from Pernille Harder, and Chelsea have their fourth.
A beautiful goal, as we heard, according to commentator Vicky Sparks. I think we'd all agree. To round off a stunning Chelsea performance, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. And I watched this game actually inside Leigh Sports Village. And this was a much more even game than the scoreline suggested. Particularly at the beginning of the second half, I thought Everton came out with some real intent and created some dangerous situations. And I'd been really interested to see what would have happened if they'd have had Govan fit up front, because they got some good crosses in, but just didn't have that kind of conversion. And Chelsea, we're still to see them click fully in attack, but their individuals are so good that even when they don't fully click, they're always a goal threat, as we saw with that Harder goal that just comes out of absolutely nowhere. 2 goals in a minute from Beth England as well, just to put the game beyond Everton. And yeah, I kind of feel for Everton, because I didn't feel like this was a 4-0 game, but Chelsea just looks so, so strong. Didn't even start Sam Kerr for this game, didn't need to trouble her, and they've beaten one of the best teams in the WSL 4-0.
Yeah, Everton without Lucy Graham as well. I thought that this was interesting. When Beth was interviewed after the game, Beth England, she said that Emma Hayes had told her side to take more shots, that they weren't basically punting enough, they weren't taking enough. And that obviously must be with respect to the goal tallies that we're seeing, the number of goals we're seeing in the WSL. But great advice from Emma Hayes, and Beth England provided.
Yeah, absolutely. And Beth, she's one of those players as well. I think a bit more than Sam Kerr. I think Sam Kerr's more of a kind of get in the box and seek out a chance, whereas I think Beth England is very much a kind of run and hit it type of striker. I think she really suits that kind of just high volume shooting tactic very nicely.
Okay, I'm going to say it. So Emma Hayes said afterwards about Beth England, because of course there's a lot of juggling going on. Fran Kirby being injured, I think, presented this opportunity to Beth England. And afterwards she said, "I'm happy for Beth today, but my job is to win games of football, not to make my players happy. And it's up to Beth to make sure that this is the start of an unbelievable run for her." Now, back in February, she was deemed by Hayes, you know, England's best number nine, and she was the best striker easily in WSL last season. And I feel that she's better than Sam Kerr. I'm going to say it. I think she's a better option. I think Sam Kerr obviously has quality, but I think since she's been playing in the WSL, I haven't seen that clinical finish that I've seen from England. Now, I know on this occasion, the couple of goals that she did score, Beth, weren't probably on the level of some of the ones that we've seen her score before. You know, there was a little bit of a close range fumbling in over the goal line. And I know she's capable of a lot different. But I think playing players that certainly in that position as a striker that are scoring goals and giving them that match time breeds the confidence for them to keep that run going. And I know here that there's a rotation policy going on. There is that has to happen to a degree. But I have to say, Tim, I feel for Beth England because I think she should be the number one. I think she should be number one choice.
I think what you see is Beth England, the team is more used to playing with Beth England up front, that their tactics, I think, are a little bit more doctored around that. And obviously they've brought in a lot of attacking talent. But that kind of, Guro Wrighton as well is another one who's kind of been in and out of the team this season, who was sensational last season. And I think that's what I mean when I say I don't think it's fully clicked. I don't think, you know, Harder and Kerr not fully integrated yet. They're such good individuals that it almost doesn't matter. But I kind of agree. I think England is, if not a better player, probably a better fit for Chelsea. But it's a really interesting challenge for Emma Hayes to kind of create an environment where both England and Kerr can just slot into the team seamlessly. And that's not easy to do.
No, and it's interesting that she said, it isn't my job to keep the players happy. And I thought to myself, isn't it?
Well,
and whose job is it?
The other thing to mention about this is at the moment, you know, they're down in third, but they've got a game in hand. Now, they could go level with Manchester United with that game
in hand.
And better on goal difference. But it could even come down to goal difference this season. I think
goal difference is really
overlooked.
And there's something coming up a little bit later on in the show when we talk about City and about managers and goal difference that I'm going to reference there. But I think you're absolutely right, Lindsay. It came into play, didn't it, last season? We didn't know the season would end the way it did, but it had a massive influence on the outcome of the winner of the league. So, yeah, this time too, I feel. Interesting, Melanie Leupolz, I thought, was brilliant in this game and certainly needs to be recognised. So she was sitting behind G, Beth England and Pernille Harder, who were kind of operating as a front three, and I thought she was really good. So in terms of combinations, maybe that is one to look at. And I guess you're right about Kerr, and it is hard to ignore one of the world's best players. I wonder whether the opposition isn't scared of her as they should be. I wonder if she's not got enough presence.
I don't know whether it's that. I think she's a very capable player, but are we starting to see what we've seen sometimes in the men's game? When big money is spent, managers then have to stick by that signing, don't they? And I just think at the moment that she would be the one. If Frank Kirby was fit as well, she'd be the one that would be the third option for me at the minute. They've got so many competitions, of course, to try and juggle that there is an easy way of pleasing everybody because there's so many fixtures. But I don't know. I don't know what the Sam Kerr issue is, Tim, but she for me, maybe it is what you say within this Chelsea side. I think she comes behind England and Kirby when she's fit.
Yeah, and what's also really interesting is that Beth England signed a new long-term contract over the summer. So you have to think that the way she's being used at the moment, that conversation must have taken place and that Emma Hayes would have been honest with her about you're not going to play every game. So presumably she's happy with that. And maybe Hayes's comment afterwards about I know how to win leagues, maybe that's not pointed, but a kind of, look, what would you rather do? Would you rather go somewhere and play every week and not win anything? Or would you rather, you know, play 60% of the games here, come on in the rest and win the league? So maybe that's what she's getting at with that comment afterwards, because it did seem a bit, I don't think the question she was asked necessarily invited that comment. That seemed to me like a message she wanted to put out.
Everton-wise, a quick one on them. They did impress me with how well they did play in this match for certain spells, because I thought that the hangover from the FA Cup final defeat would be very, very visible, and it wasn't as visible as I thought it would. But I still stick by what I said, which was this was the wrong fixture for them.
Yeah, totally. Particularly missing Lucy Graham and Govan up front as well. It's just, you know, Everton are one of those teams. I think we saw this in the Cup final as well, where they really matched Man City up. But when it came to options off the bench, Man City just had a few more. And we're talking about this dilemma that Emma Hayes has got. And Everton aren't quite there at the moment. They can't they can't replace players like Lucy Graham and Govan. They've got a brilliant starting 11, but the squad is probably still coming together. And you're right. Like, I think they would have probably preferred to have played, you know, a COVID depleted Bristol or Brighton rather than Chelsea this weekend.
Let's move on then. So Chelsea play Arsenal next, which is going to be a great one. And we need to turn our attention to the other end of the table now. West Ham secured their first win of the season. I feel like we need a special da-da-da-da-da-da coming from behind to beat Birmingham City 2-1. City's Claudia Walker had an eventful first half, scoring at both ends. And then Aussie Emily Van Egmond's second half header sealed the win for the Hammers. Gosh, this is much needed, isn't it, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely. And I saw a bit of West Ham's Conti Cup game against Reading in the week, and they were actually really good in that. And I watched it and kind of looking at the highlights, and you see these players like Leon and Rachel Daly and Alicia Lehman going forward, and you think they've got a lot of talent, West Ham. They really, really should, you know, I don't think they should be challenging or anything like that, but they should not be looking for their first win of the season at this stage. And yeah, again, their attacking talent, I think, really, really came through in this one. But I think that win against Reading on a Wednesday night in the Conti Cup probably just gave them the little bit of impetus they needed for this game, particularly when they went 1-0 down.
They needed a lift, I think, and it was a really good reaction from them. I think they could have got even more goals in this game. But one thing I wanted to flag, Tim, is they really are getting into a habit of conceding first. And I was looking back on, you know, the Everton League match, the Spurs League match, those games in particular. And it took that goal, that opening goal, to wake them up. And then usually what they'd go and do is they go and score quite quickly after conceding and equalise. It seems to be this pattern that's emerging, but they need to get out of that habit and actually be the ones making the statement first.
Yeah, absolutely. I think defensively, and you know, obviously watching them against Arsenal a few weeks ago when they shipped nine, defensively they still look really disorganised to me. Again, they've got good individuals in defence. You know, someone like Gilly Flaherty has been there, seen it and done it, but they just seem to really lack organisation back there. Whereas their attack, they've got a front three that's coming together. You could see it even against Manchester United when they lost there. They were, you know, they kept giving Tobin Heath loads and loads of space. And I was just watching it thinking, surely you talked before the game about not giving Tobin Heath space. But every time they went forward, they looked threatening. And I guess a lot of their games are becoming these kind of shootout games. And probably this one was to a degree as well, and they've just got more than Birmingham have.
West Ham now ninth on 4 points. Birmingham 2 points and two places above them. And congratulations to Carla Ward as well. She's Barclays Manager of the Month for October, so well done to her. What could Birmingham City have done differently? What's the analysis on this one?
I mean, I'd start by saying that it was a difficult game for Birmingham to come into when they'd had 3 weeks away from competitive football. And such a key word in football is momentum, and that momentum for them had been disrupted. And I felt for Carla Ward, you know, it's been difficult. I thought Sarah Mayling as well. There was that chance where she hit the post, and if that had gone in, it could have changed the way that the pendulum swung in this match. And of course, for Birmingham, they play Aston Villa next in that Birmingham derby. Let's talk about that opposition. Aston Villa beating Brighton by 2-0. And it was another first of the season to tell you about. Villa securing their first point since promotion, beating Brighton away. I think that's the point. They were away from home 2-0. Second half goals from Anita Asante and Ramona Peltzelberger sealed the win. And they've only played 4 games this season. And worth reminding us of that one. They've got to be relieved, Tim, to get off the mark for starters.
I think so, yeah. I looked at their squad when they came up and I had no worries about them in terms of relegation. I thought they'd probably be in the West Ham, Tottenham, Brighton area of the league. But until that first result comes, you can never really be sure of that. The situation with Brighton probably helped them quite a bit because Brighton away is a tricky fixture. Brighton do tend to take points off of the teams around them at home. But for Villa, in terms of their confidence and just getting back on track, they had a difficult start as well. And that start at home to Manchester City, not ideal. But yeah, huge relief for them. I think they'll be absolutely fine. I don't really see them in the relegation battle. I see them hovering just above it this season.
Interesting. Well, Brighton manager Hope Powell, as you referenced, watched the game from home. She was self-isolating. Midweek, the side were forced to axe their League Cup fixture with Charlton. That's after a staff member tested positive for COVID-19. So a tough week for them. I just want to highlight the fact that, you know, Villa do look good in terms of their playing rota, and just some really good chances in this one, aside from the goals as well. Jodie Hutton had a great effort at point blank range, kept out well actually by Brighton keeper Megan Walsh. There was a really nice chance for Danish international Stina Larsson as well for Villa too, and then Anita Asante's finish. We need to doff our cap to this one as well. It was a great goal from Neitz actually, and I was really, really pleased for her. And then again, you know, really nice goal for Villa's second, a lob over the keeper and into the goal for Ramona Petzelsberger. In fact, I was laughing to myself whilst I was looking at these games, because I thought if you put an R in Ramona Petzelsberger name, you could have a pretzel and a burger for those people who like food type surnames. So ridiculous, isn't it? But it has to be mentioned. Let's move on to the next game from the weekend, staying at the foot of the table. And you really got a feel for Bristol City, the only side yet to pick up a point so far this season. And they were on the end of an 8-1 defeat at the hands of FA Cup winners Manchester City. Amongst those eight goals, there were two for Ellen White, and that takes her to 50 goals in the league. Another milestone for her.
I do think it's worth mentioning here, Kate, that Bristol City had five players self-isolating after one player developed COVID-19 symptoms ahead of this match. Bristol did ask the FA for a postponement, which was denied. They had to draft in players from the club's academy. Bristol also played in the League Cup on Thursday night. So I think we start with the mixed emotions, I guess, to this game, Tim, because a very comprehensive win for City, but Bristol City will be on their knees after this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, I don't really understand why Aston Villa were allowed to postpone two games, whereas Bristol City weren't allowed to postpone this one. I also don't really understand why it happened, why they played on Thursday night and Saturday. But, you know, we're talking about goal difference as well. In terms of the integrity of the league, you know, if Man City get a Champions League place on goal difference, if Bristol go down on goal difference, you could really point to this game as something that really turned it. And I guess with Bristol, the situation, it kind of emphasises some of the inequalities as well, in terms of, like, most WSL clubs will have players cohabiting. Arsenal, for example, will have like two players cohabiting, whereas Bristol City will have four and five, and they share their training ground with, I think, the Bristol Flyers and with the local university. So there's much, much more prospect of this happening to a club like Bristol.
That's a very good point, Tim. Really, really good point to make, because I don't think people realise the setups behind the scenes. But yeah, they don't have the financial backing.
Yeah, precisely. And that, you know, as well as we saw the inequality on the pitch with the size of the score, but clubs like Brighton and Bristol and Aston Villa, you know, clubs near the bottom of the WSL, they're the ones so far who've kind of had the COVID outbreaks. We hope that they don't pop up anywhere else, but I think they're far less likely to happen at the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea and the Manchester clubs, and that's an issue.
Yeah, also to be mentioned, the COVID test for the player with symptoms was done on the Saturday, and as of today, so Tuesday lunchtime, I still don't think they've had a result through, and that's got to be quicker for an elite club having to operate under these COVID guidelines. You need to be getting your test back within 24 hours.
I feel so strongly for Tanya Oxtoby and Bristol City with this. These sorts of results, getting an 8-1 drumming, not only is it difficult for her to then motivate her team to recover from that result, they can be really difficult. I want to mention these young players that were brought into the side from the academy. We're talking about teenagers. We're talking about young girls getting their first minutes in WSL. And that's their first memory. I think that's going to have a huge lasting effect on some of these young players. And I think it's irresponsible that was allowed to happen. The 8-1, it seems great for Manchester City. But let's take a moment to think about those young academy players that came in and stepped into the fold.
And also that you've got the situation where the academy players wouldn't have been allowed to train from maybe Wednesday or Thursday onwards.
Yeah, she was lucky to only be playing them a couple of days after that. Whereas if you've got that situation in 3 weeks' time, you can't really call on your academy players because they're going to be relied upon to be training at home. It was interesting. Kelly Simmons, the director of the Women's Professional Game, was interviewed on Women's Football Weekly for TalkSport 2 with Faye Carruthers on Monday evening. She was talking about this game and she just said basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, but pretty much a line had to be drawn that they couldn't keep cancelling fixtures needlessly because of COVID. In other words, because there wasn't a COVID outbreak, they were waiting on a test result and there were people who'd come into contact with that person who had symptoms. You know, it isn't classed as an outbreak, and that what she doesn't want to do is for games to continue to stack up. You're already going to get the stacking up of games after positive COVID cases. If you're stacking them up when you've just got someone with symptoms and you've not got enough players, then that adds to it needlessly, I suppose, she's saying. So that's the FA's perspective on it.
From a Manchester City point of view, look, they can only play what's put in front of them. And I think they would have been happy if the game had been postponed from Bristol City's request. But when it wasn't, you know, Gareth Taylor's got to put his best team out there and they went and absolutely tore it up. I don't think you can say too much against them at all. You know, their performance was fantastic. They had multiple different goal scorers, which has got to be encouraging when you're trying to fight on quite a few different competition fronts. And, you know, Ellen White getting two goals, that will do her the world of good as well.
That was interesting. Gareth Taylor was asked at the end of the game about the goal count. And he said he wanted to be respectful to the opposition by telling his players not to take the foot off the gas in the second half. And I thought, well, that's fair enough. But also, mate, you want to build up your goal difference, don't you? And this is a competitive game and you're going to take your opportunity to build that goal difference wherever you can.
And I think Manchester City needed a game like this, really. They've not convinced fully in attack this season, and they had that draw with Brighton, and I think they've struggled a little bit with some of these teams you'd really expect them to beat, and particularly at home. I think Gareth Taylor would be really, really grateful to get probably the first, you know, significant big win in terms of the scoreline of his tenure.
Okay, so let's move on to the final game of the weekend, Tottenham 1, Reading 1. And Kate, we can finally say her name out loud and everything. Alex Morgan has made her debut for Spurs. She came on after 70 minutes in their 1-1 draw with Reading. Spurs' goal didn't come from the American, though. It did come from Ashley Neville, who cancelled out Brooke Chaplin's opener for Reading. Where do we begin? I don't think we start with Alex Morgan. I think we start with drop points for Reading in this one because they did finish the stronger of the two, didn't they, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely. And they had a lot of really promising kind of situations in the last 15, 20 minutes of the game. And I think this is a game they really missed Farrah Williams in midfield because they just couldn't get the final pass right. There's Dan Carter making some good runs, but they just kept messing up that final pass. And I just think if Farrah had been on the field, you know, you might have seen that quality of pass in the final third that kind of got away from them, and having taken the lead as well, I think Reading will be disappointed and regard this very much as two points drop.
It was a good game for Spurs' Ciri Vorm. It was her corner that was headed in by Ashley Neville. And as Jessie Parker-Humphreys pointed out in her Five Things article this week, it's up on the website, the defender has been provider for three of Tottenham's four WSL goals this season. Alex Morgan came on, as you mentioned, Lindsay, and my notes say that she was like a Frisian horse bounding onto the pitch with her mane flowing. At the end of the game, she said it was a good starting point.
Yeah, and I didn't see many clear-cut chances for her, I have to say, in this 20-minute
spell. No, she didn't really get involved.
She wasn't overly involved. She wasn't overly on the ball, actually. But it would just be what she needs just to sort of get her return coming, I suppose, over the next few weeks, whereby she will be at match fitness. This was all about, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, she's not played for close to 18 months now. You know, had a baby earlier this year. It's an amazing feat.
6 months ago, yeah.
An incredible feat to be able to play a top-level game 6 months after giving birth. And I think you could see that there was a bit of rustiness there. One thing I'm just really interested in is, you know, once she gets a bit more match fitness, how she adapts to playing for a team like Tottenham, who don't have most of the ball, who don't create an awful lot of chances, who kind of seek to defend first. I'm really interested to see how she copes with that challenge once she's up to full fitness.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is the Offside Rule WSL edition, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Well, one other story from the weekend is about football academies and the regional training centres. Under the new lockdown rules, boys' academies are permitted to carry on training in the top two leagues, but girls can't unless they can meet elite protocol, even if they play at the same clubs. That's because they're classified as non-elite and grassroots sport across England has been banned for 4 weeks. I hope you all kept up with that one. Basically, it isn't fair, is it, Lindsay?
Oh, not fair. I mean, it feels like we've taken mammoth steps backwards. Now, I understand what the FA representatives, I mean, Baroness Sue Campbell spoken, who's the head of women's football. Kelly Simmons, as you mentioned on TalkSport 2, spoke. And I understand that there is a gulf in resources between women's academies, girls' academies and the boys' academies. And I think that there has been an element of a retraction in terms of girls can now train if they can meet those elite protocols. But of course, to meet those elite protocols means a lot of testing, a lot of finances, a lot of staff, a lot of money. Yeah. Yes, yeah. A lot of money. And so they're only expecting one or two clubs to be able to deliver that. And I just think, well, when are we going to get to the crux of this issue? Because it can't always just come down to money all the time, or there needs to be a redistribution of wealth in the game. And it needs to seriously happen soon, because we cannot keep giving these opportunities to young boys and then not offering them to young girls. What message does that send out to the whole world at the moment? We are going to look back on this story and we're going to be wondering, how was this 2020 when this story was being discussed?
Yeah. You know, same with the FA Cup fixtures as well. And I think what this does, Lindsay, is it blows up things that should have been thought about but haven't. And it is actually, if we're to look at the positive, it shows you how far the game has come, that this feels so wrong, that this feels like such a gaping gap. Look, it basically highlights how academy teams need to be classified. It highlights how they need to be supported. And actually, really good point from the Lewis GM, Maggie Murphy. She wrote a little bit about it online and she said, you know, you're much better to address some of the structural issues and ensure that in the long term, their safety, welfare and professional development is promoted and prioritised at the same level of boys. Them not being permitted to play right now is just an indicator of a much bigger problem that can't be solved by allowing them to play during a global pandemic. And I think she's actually spot on about that.
She is spot on, but it needs addressing and it can't keep being hidden behind the fact that we're getting great viewing figures for World Cups, that FIFA have started to shift their take on it. You know, they're definitely investing a lot more in the women's game for World Cups and tournaments, for instance. But if we don't address it further down the chain, then it's going to keep rearing its head. And the one thing I wanted to say was Natalie, who's a big Manchester United fan who engages with the podcast quite a bit, she alerted me to this story. And you read the thread from that original tweet that was making people aware of this going on. And there was one case study that just made it so clear, so crystal clear. A mother who's got twins, one boy, one a girl, exactly the same age, and she says exactly the same ability in their own fields. They love playing football, both of them. And she said, how do I say to my little girl that your brother can go and do what he wants to do and have a smile on his face, but you can't?
The other issue is, and I'm just going to pop in with this quickly because it does relate to the government guidelines, so you need to have a little look at that side of it as well. But basically, boys' academies operate within a school system, okay? So they are, you know, schooled alongside their football training. training. And what that means is you can classify boys' academies as educational settings, and the government allows sport to go on, grassroots sport to go on in educational settings, because the women's game isn't at the point yet where girls are being schooled alongside coaching as they are boys for those academies. That's why there's a little bit of a difference there as well. I'm not saying it's right. What I'm saying is I'm glad it's blown up. I'm glad that there's been some exposure. I hope that funding is found as well. And it's great that we're talking about it, right, Tim? It's great that we're outraged.
And that's exactly the kind of structural thing that Maggie would have been talking about, the kind of, well, why is girls' football not considered in an educational setting? It's like peeling an onion, right? No matter how many surface-level explanations, the root is always that there is an inequality there that shouldn't exist. There is no reason for kind of girls and boys who are, you know, 7, 8, 10 years old or whatever to be considered different in that respect. And I think also you're right that it's good that we're having the conversation, but this conversation needs to happen before the action, not afterwards. You know, we're having it in retrospect because the action's already been taken and it hasn't been thought
about.
Which
is like the bad old days of women's football, isn't it?
Indeed. And you know, we understand the whole COVID thing is very fast moving and it needs fast action and fast decisions. But these are the kind of conversations that should happen before this kind of action is taken.
Regardless of COVID.
Indeed.
Yeah, it actually shouldn't have been a conversation for a pandemic. It should have been sorted anyway. All right, well, I think we've blown off some hot air there, Linz.
Yeah, I think we have.
Well, let's move on to good things ahead. It is another women's football weekend this weekend as the WSL looks to take advantage of a break in the men's game for the internationals. For the first time ever, fixtures will be staggered. And you mentioned what a good move that was earlier, Tim. So, of course, it means fans can watch all six matches without any kickoff clashes. Goodness me, we're going to have to get the popcorn in for this, aren't we? Maybe a bottle of wine even. Brilliant weekend of action in store. Starts with a Manchester derby.
Yes, on Saturday, you've got Manchester United against Manchester City. There's also a Birmingham derby live from Villa Park, Aston Villa against Birmingham. Everton take on Reading and Bristol City versus Spurs towards the bottom. I'm just wondering where all the attention will be going on this day.
Don't be naughty. On Sunday, Arsenal take on Chelsea in a London derby and West Ham play Brighton. So, Mr. Stillman, give us your pick of those ties.
I'm going to have to be slightly boring and go for the Manchester derby. You know, Manchester United, they are top now. They are the kind of the subject of discussion. And I think there would have been a lot of eyes on this anyway. But I think now there will be an extra pressure maybe on Manchester United to kind of prove their title credentials. And also, if we're talking about the top three qualifying for the Champions League, you know, at the very least, Manchester United are looking to gatecrash that. And you might look at Man City as one of the more vulnerable teams in terms of falling out of the top three. So I think that's going to be a fascinating game. I'm really looking forward to seeing how Casey Stoney approaches this one.
Are you worried about Arsenal-Chelsea?
I'm absolutely petrified, yes. So I'll be at that game on Sunday. My first time at Meadow Park, actually, since February. They've only just started to allow written media back in, so I've been covering the games remotely. But yes, I didn't really want to mention that one, to be quite honest.
That's the match that's going to get my attention, I have to say, Tim, because what we discussed earlier, you know, Chelsea will high press and Joe Montemurro, hopefully he's been busy this week, working on ways for Arsenal to cope with that. And I'm sure that there will be an improvement from Arsenal after the Man United shock.
Linz, what's the appetite for the Birmingham derby? This is near where you grew up, so I'm going to aim this one at you. Villa versus Birmingham.
I think if fans had been allowed to be in the stadium for this one, I think this would have sold a lot of tickets. Because what you have to remember as well, when you've got sort of this tribal following, is that Aston Villa and Birmingham in the men's game haven't faced each other for a while. I think there would be a lot of people wanting to get on board for this rivalry. It's huge, Kate. It is huge across Birmingham.
And, you know, Aston Villa had a fantastic season in the Championship last season. Birmingham are doing better than expected. So I would expect, if nothing else, this to pique the interest of a few people who would normally be watching men's football at the weekend. I think they will definitely tune in for this. I hope it's a good game for them.
I think Villa will think they're not that far away. So we'll see when this final score comes in. All right. Well, thanks to you, Tim. What's next for you? So you are going to go to Meadow Park at the weekend.
Yes. So I'm covering Arsenal-Chelsea. I'm hoping to get into Arsenal-Spurs for the Conti Cup game as well. A few interviews lined up with some Arsenal players during the international break as well. So, yeah, very much keeping busy on the Arsenal women beat in particular.
We look forward to reading it all. Thanks also to Ella Toon, who joined us. And there's some congrats in store, isn't there, Lindsay, for one of our producers?
Yes, Abby, who produces The Offside Rule, which we release on Thursdays, has been nominated for Best Sports Producer at the Industry Awards for the Audio Production Awards. So we wanted to say a big good luck to Abby, and it's so nice to see her being recognised.
Yeah, really good for Abby, so well done to her. You can rate, review and subscribe, so all of the above. If you're going to rate us, though, there's only really one option, isn't there, Lindsay?
Oh yeah, the final star. Everybody knows this now. 5 stars. The thing to do is to leave a little written review as well, even if it's just a sentence. Honestly, it helps other people find this show. And we've started getting in emails from Canada, the US, haven't we, Kate?
Lynn's talking of that, we have had a fresh review in, so it seems remiss of me not to mention it. Best Women's Football Podcast is the title. As a huge fan of women's football, this is the best podcast by a mile, says LF The Cap. The hosts know the sport inside out, not just the top three or four clubs. Recent interviews with Carla Ward and Jess Park show they don't go for the obvious speakers. The special with Natasha Dowie was brilliant because it went beyond football, living and playing abroad, marriage, etc. A must listen.
Nice. Oh, we'll have more of those, please.
Yes, absolutely more of those. Tim Stillman, thanks very much for joining us this week.
My pleasure as always. Thank you for having me.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Offside Rule at offsiderulepodcast.com and by following at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Offside Rule WSL edition is a Muddy Knees Media production.
Muddy Knees Media.